Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. It's your boy, TP Timeless. Welcome to the Sunday Morning Brunch, the Easter Sunday edition. March Madness is coming to an end as of this week. A lot of stuff to run into as we run into the show. But first and foremost, a lot of stuff has happened within this week. I want to get a moment of silence to a former NFL football player, Trey Walker, from the Baltimore Ravens. Moment of silence for Trey Walker. Okay, Sports City, they got 90 minutes with us, man. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside. The kitchen timeless is alive.
Oh, welcome to Sports City. TP Timeless is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Timeless holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to rock.
And the only thing I got, one thing to wish you, people.
Good morning.
It's a small city chef with Sunday the brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark the Moses and TP Timeless.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours of facts, and that's a fact, yeah.
Call the number is 917-889-9592. Like I said, you got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but y'all are here with the chef. And like I said, this is the last week in March. Mayhem has been all across the board in all sports. I mean, from hockey to basketball to college basketball. I mean, you name it, it's been going down. Even my girls are standing up tall with the Tennessee Lady Vols doing their work up against the Ohio State University. Man, I'm happy about everything that's going on, man. So we got four more days left in this month, and we got a Sunday locked and loaded, especially Easter Sunday, with a couple of games that we get to look into. There's only one, I repeat, right? If I'm not mistaken, there's one, number one left, if I'm not mistaken. It might be two. I think Virginia's the number one, two up there. If not, I think it's North Carolina and Virginia. But number ones is not safe anymore. The overall number one has been knocked off. We're going to get into all of that. A lot of games, and especially somebody I need to talk about. I need to talk about them. But let me get these guys in here. I got Chandler, and I also got Tommy B in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you guys feeling this morning?
I'm good. Happy Easter.
Same to you, brother. I think I also have Chandler here, but I'm going to just run right into a lot of this. I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to start it off differently. Okay. I'm gonna say this. The number one overall was the Kansas Jayhawks. They are out as of last night, having a heck of a game be played by the Villanova Wildcats. And I'm not going to lie, people. I'm going to keep it 100% honest here in the kitchen. I am a Big East guy. They know I'm a diehard Big East guy. I had this matchup in the Elite Eight, and I took Kansas to win. I actually had Kansas winning it all. So you got to understand how important this game was. I'm at the edge of my seat like, if Villanova wins, it's going to be a heck of an upset. If Kansas come off, it's like, whew, I dodged a bullet. Kansas ended up having some questionable calls be called against them. Their guard, Devontae Graham, was probably the hottest thing on the floor that could knock down some shots. He got three questionable foul calls against him, including the foul that they fouled him out off of. He was diving for the ball, actually grabbed the ball, but he took John Hart's leg out. They called him for the foul. A lot of people are up in arms about that call, but, I mean, it's a call that they can't reverse. So it was a foul call that was made. Let's start there with the overall number one in the Kansas Jayhawks falling to Villanova last night. Epic Elite Eight matchup. Chandler, I'll come to you first. Your thoughts on the Wildcats advancing to the Final Four?
I thought it was a good game. I had to root for Villanova since I'm not going to school at Villanova. But, I mean, I thought Kansas had a good shot to win. It came out to the end. I don't see anything. I wouldn't criticize anything about the game. There's foul calls in every game. I thought it was a really good game. Kansas played hard. Villanova just did a little bit more than Kansas was able to do. I don't think it should be looked at as a knock against Bill Self and the whole underachieving thing. I think what those kids did by staying for 4 years, becoming a veteran team, I think that says a lot about them. All of them helped their draft stock. So, for me, it was, you know, the better team won.
Now, I'm glad that you already brought that twist into this, and I wasn't even thinking about bringing that twist into this off the jump. You already stated two words that I needed to address, and I didn't even think about it. Bill and Self. Now, I don't know how I could just, you know, just start. I don't even want to make it look like I'm aiming at him. But for them to be a number one overall team, him not getting any effort out of Perry Ellis. Perry Ellis was a no-show. I wonder what Jay Wright did specifically to basically know him out of the game, how they look forward to, you know, Bill Self achieving better than this. He loses, you know, some interesting players off of this roster. I mean, how do they view the head coach and Bill Self falling to a foe or opponent that actually had the ability to knock them off with some, you know, big game shots and being ready to turn them over, especially with better guard play last night?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing you said about Roy Williams till he won. It said about Dean Smith till he won. I mean, it's luck and timing in this thing. And a lot of the years that they've been ranked overall number one or number two, honestly, they shouldn't have been. They were ranked that way because of the name on the jersey, not because the team deserved it. Kansas, not for nothing, honestly, shouldn't have been the number one overall. I thought it should have went to Oklahoma. And I said that a long time ago. I thought it should have went to Oklahoma. But because they were ranked, people are going to say underachieved. You know, it's luck and timing in sports sometimes. And sometimes you're just not meant to win the big game. You know, Villanova did a good thing. Again, another veteran team. You know, and they took Perry Ellis out of the game. And that was really the difference in the game, is Perry Ellis really wasn't able to impact the game like he normally does. Neither did Selden to a large extent. But sometimes, guess what? The other team is just better than you sometimes. Sometimes it's not anybody's fault. Sometimes the other team is just better.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts on the number one overall Kansas Jayhawks falling to the Villanova Wildcats. Villanova going to the Final Four in epic form.
Boys, Villanova's playing over their head. They played this damn good all damn year. Two, Miami and Kansas decided to play their worst game of the year. Well, actually, I take that back. Miami's played their second worst game of the year, because the worst game they ever played was when they played North Carolina. And I wonder what the hell Kansas is even thinking. You can. This is why North Carolina or Miami and Kansas lost. One, they decided, here, let's throw the ball. Here, hold the ball. Here's the ball. Here, hit it out of my hand. Here, I won't watch where I throw the ball. I'll just throw it right here where the defender's at. When all you do is look on the back side, the damn son of a bitch was open. They don't look where they're throwing the ball. Two, why in the hell are you getting into a three-point contest with them? Get to the basket. That's what they want you to do, is get into a three-point contest with them. And Salem Jr., what the hell are you shooting threes for? You went, oh, what was it, 0-9, 0-10? Get to the basket. Now, the official that called that cheap foul on Graham, I about lost it. I literally lost it. I hit up my friends that are officiating and asked them, am I missing something since I'm a coach? They're like, no. They're like, there's no way in hell you can call that. Because it fell in over, did the same thing all the way through the game. And nothing was called. I'm really starting to suspect some of these officials in calling. I'm just saying.
You know, I understand, you know, how people perceive that play, and I think the anticipation was more or less the reason why the ref had made that call, especially the way that Hart came out from underneath Graham, where Graham got to the ball before him. And as you see, Graham gets to the ball, but, it's kind of like simultaneous. As soon as he gets to the ball, he takes his leg out, and it's not like it was an intentional situation, so I don't know if that's a call that the ref has to make. But they had three different calls against Graham that actually put him into foul trouble, and that was the nail in the coffin, where Kansas still survived the storm. They still had, Mason Jr. come down there and hit a big three to try and cut the lead to one when they were actually down four. But then they had a critical turnover at the end of the game as well. I don't know what you've been seeing with Villanova. Villanova's been playing great basketball this year. They've actually been ranked number one as well. So I think that they were up for the challenge being the number two seed in that bracket up against the number one in Kansas. And not for nothing, I think before the conference tournaments, I won't say the big dance, but I'll say the conference tournaments. Before the conference tournament started, I was saying to myself, Villanova has too much for a lot of teams across the nation. Villanova has paint play. Ocean Foods has been a guy that's been eating glass. I mean, if he probably took a crap, he would probably cut the toilet bowl. I mean, he is eating glass. They got I can't even say the guy's name, the shooter, Arachnido. Like, his name is crazy long, but I've seen him all four of his years while he was in Villanova as well, coming up with big shots. He missed one free throw, did not miss again, and they were fouling him because he was the guy hanging on to the ball, late. So he wanted that ball at that critical point in time, and that's what you call that senior leadership, wanting to go the extra mile and actually turning Mason Jr. over late while Mason Jr. thought one of the guys was coming over the top for a pass and, getting him to lose the ball, and everything just basically went downhill for Kansas from there. But this is a big game by any means for Villanova. Villanova came out there, survived the storm, especially with Kansas getting, that momentum on their side, taking the lead without Perry Ellis. They were getting it done. And I agree with Chandler. I say this, them without Perry Ellis scoring at least 10 points, like early in the game, they shut him out. He was shut out in the first
half.
They
didn't shut him out. His teammates shut him out because they wasn't looking for it. They wanted to go up and jack three.
He had shots on.
They wasn't looking for it.
He had field goal attempts, though, Tommy, in the first half. That's the thing. Tommy, I think if he was more aggressive going for the ball in the paint, he missed a couple of questionable bunnies. It wasn't even like he was shooting, 10-footers. He was at the rim missing shots. I think that the zone defense that Villanova put around him, making him see big bodies, frustrated him, and he was missing shots more than ever. I mean, this has been the more questionable effort that I've seen out of Perry Ellis, and for him to make the jump to the NBA, it's going to get worse for him. He's going to see bigger bigs in the league now. So, I mean, there's a recipe out for him right now. There is a recipe out for him. If he sees quality defense, can he score? Does he have the knack to, shake that off, shake off his first two misses and still be able to provide for his team? These are going to be things that the NBA combine is going to look at. Some of these scouts are going to be like, well, hey, he didn't show up in the Elite Eight because he was held down. You got to go into that huddle. Tell him that you want the ball. If his teammates aren't finding him, then tell him that you want the ball. Tell him. Talk to him. He's the senior leader. I don't know. Chandler, do you see different? Or, I mean, we can move from this topic if you like.
Well, with Perry Ellis, what I see is a kid who improved every year in college, which is why he stayed. Right now, he's a mid to late first-round draft pick, which is guaranteed money. There's upside to his game. Yes, he has to learn. He has to work on his shot like most kids do when they go into the league. I don't think he hurt his draft stock at all. I think if you look at the arc of his play, from when he got to Kansas to where he is now, it's a tremendous improvement, which shows the kid's willing to work. So he ran into a team, like I said, once again, that they had something for him. And for me, I look at it like this. If Villanova had been the number one and Kansas was the number two, would anybody be screaming about this win? Would they be talking about it was an upset? No. They would say, okay, the best team won. The team that was supposed to win won. I don't think Kansas should have been number one. But, again, if you look at what Villanova did, Jay Wright's a pretty good coach. And you know what? He took the most important player out of the game. And Perry Ellis is a guy who will trust his teammates. And if he's not you know, in a position, or if he thinks if forcing isn't the way to go, he'll trust his teammates to score. So, and it came down to what? The last, what, 15 seconds of the game? It came down to the last 15 seconds of the game. So when you get to the last 15 seconds with a chance to win, that's all you can ask for. That's all you can ask for when you're playing a team that's just as good as you.
Okay, Tommy, anything else before we get away from this game?
No, I'm good.
Okay, now, I didn't want to open up with this topic, but I definitely want to talk about it. I definitely want to talk about it. Oklahoma knocking off another number one, another 2-1 matchup where the number two seed took that underdog, adrenaline and basically, I want to say, throttled Oregon. And basically, they won by double digit. But I want to go outside of that. And, of course, it's like the elephant in college basketball. They say elephant in the room. I'm going to say the elephant in college basketball. You know, they've been talking about Ben Simmons, you know, guys of that nature. Y'all already know where I'm going. Buddy Hield is the real deal. Now, I've been watching him all throughout his career in Oklahoma, watching him, just like Chandler said about Perry Ellis, watching him get better and better and better. And I don't know what Kobe Bryant could have said to him the other day, but this boy, I apologize. This man came out there and smoked Oregon. Okay, 37 points. He almost went for 40 on him. I could give him the leg up to say 40, but 37, 13 for 20 from the field, like above 50% shooting, 8 for 13 from three. So he was drilling. He was not playing around with these dudes at all. He was not trying to go home with that never-say-die attitude. Buddy Hield, I'm not going to lie, I've been watching you all 4 years. This year, even more, I've turned it up. I am a big fan. Even if you go home in the next game, I am a big fan of yours. Not scared to take any shot. Wherever he is on the floor, if he's across half court, he's shooting with confidence, and the team and the coach believes in him. I give them a ton of, you know, from Kruger being their head coach and believing into these guys and, you know, guys they have in the paint. Everything was working for Oklahoma up against the Oregon team that just knocked Duke off. All of the stuff that's been surrounding Coach K in front of Oregon, I don't think that had nothing to do with this game. I think Oklahoma was ready to get to this Final Four. And, similar to what, Bob Huggins said a month or two ago, they have Buddy Hield, and we don't. I think Oklahoma goes as far as his heart carries them. I think I don't know. I'm not even going to start spilling karma all over him. But I want to know how you guys feel about Oklahoma coming off up against Oregon. Tommy, I'll come to you first.
I expect it. I had them going to the Final Four, and I actually had them playing Kansas, and I figured we'd have another exit matchup out of the two best teams out of the Big 12. But, of course, Villanova ruined that. But, Ty, who's been on Buddy Hield all year?
Actually, the two of you, you and Taylor, actually been on him. Both of y'all have been on him.
The only thing, and I'm glad Kenny Smith said it after the game, because I picked it up, just never said anything, and he's going to have to work on it, the next level. Is Buddy Hield can't, if you make him go right, he can't pull up and jumper. He's got to go to the basket. If you make him go left, if he goes left like he wants, he gets the gallery self and pop it, and he's done. You're done. Buddy Hill's the real deal. I actually can't wait till Saturday to see them play against Nova, against that zone defense, the way Nova's guards get up in them. I can't wait. Because if they do that and they beat Oklahoma, I'll come on the show and say congratulations, but I really don't see it happening. But I hope I just didn't curse the Sooners. But Buddy Hield is a beast.
And here's the thing. I think they're going to have to extend the zone because the zone actually wants you to shoot. He wants to shoot. They're going to have to extend that zone. They might have to switch to man, which I think Villanova's defense, they're actually ready for anything, but their zone has actually been working for them and getting them out of a lot of strong situations. Now, if the percentages are when he drives right that his field goal percentage is down, I think that'll come within time, but with the scoring output that this guy's been able to put on, I mean, even when these defenses concentrate to try and put two people on him, they even try to put two people on him going down court. Like I mean, we've seen Steph Curry do it, but Steph is, you know, doing it off of screens. He has a lot of ball control. Buddy Hield is getting away from these guys, and no matter what's happening, he's making it happen. I mean, the percentages may work in the favor of the defense, but this has been some awesome basketball all year long. His consistency has been there. I mean, he's had, I want to say, the most probably 4 to 5 games of him not playing extreme basketball, but you know he's on the doggone floor. Chandler, your thoughts on Oklahoma advancing and Buddy Hield, the guy that you've been talking about just as much as Tommy has?
Well, the thing I like about the Oklahoma team, their primary players go senior, senior, junior, senior, junior. Okay? Mm. Three of those are guards. And that's the thing with this team is, okay, let's say you do a boxing one on Buddy Hield. Isaiah Cousins will shoot you out of the gym. Okay?
Mm.
Daniel Harper can shoot. The kid, well, they have Jordan Woodard will shoot you out of the gym. So if you concentrate on Buddy Hield, they're going to kill you with the other two guys. That's the beauty of this team. And I said a long time ago, Buddy Hield is the player of the year in college basketball. He should be the number one pick. I don't want to hear anything about Ben Simmons, because Buddy Hield has the one thing Ben Simmons doesn't, and that is the aggressiveness to dominate the game. Okay? He will take over the game and say, give me the ball and get out of my way. That's the one thing Ben Simmons doesn't have. Buddy Hield should be the number one pick. He should be the number one pick. If the Sixers get the number one pick, I'm drafting Buddy Hield. But, I mean, it's this Oklahoma team. And, I mean, look at when they played Oklahoma early, Kansas early in the year. He dropped 46 on them in a loss. He dropped 46. 46 on them. Okay? And I saw that game, and that's still, to me, the best game of the season. So, you know, I don't know if Oklahoma's going to the national championship. I'd like them to, because I like this team. I like the unselfishness that those three guys play with, because Buddy's getting all the attention. But those other two guys are really good, too. Those other two guards, they're really, really good, you know. And they don't seem to have that hate like we saw at LSU, where they would freeze Ben Simmons out for long periods where they wouldn't even pass the ball. These guys, they share the ball. This is a really, really good Oklahoma team, man. This is a really good team. And I think they can go as far as those three guards take them. And the thing with Villanova is, yeah, Villanova can push that defense out. But you got three shooters on the floor. When you got three shooters on the floor, I mean three legitimate shooters, I don't care what you're playing, man. Somebody's going to be open. One of those shooters is going to be open. So if you rotate the defense to him, guess what? Now the other dude's open. You rotate to him, the third guy's open.
They got some Bangler, too, that can shoot.
Right. Yeah, he's a redshirt. He's a redshirt senior. I forgot all about him. I mean, they got a Cole's a redshirt junior. This is a veteran team, and the thing I like about it, when you watch them play, you can tell they actually like playing with each other. But you don't see that a lot with a lot of these teams where somebody's getting shine, everybody else, now I want my shots. Whoever's scoring, he gets the ball. And look, I like this team. I really do. But Buddy Hield, man, listen, if he doesn't get the award for what's that, the Naismith Award, the fix is in.
right. And here goes another stat. I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal, but it ended up panning out in Oklahoma's favor. The glass, 38-32, Oklahoma win that. They had 38 rebounds compared to 32 in Oregon, in which they had a guy come off the bench, and James, having 10 rebounds off the bench. That's 10 different possessions, people. That's 10 possessions. Whether it's, and he split it. He did equal opportunity. 5 defense, 5 offense. Like, they were working Oregon on the glass. Oregon wasn't getting into this game off the glass. They had to try to find another way. And to slow down Buddy Hield, I guess that was not in the plans, or they didn't get the MO, or they didn't watch video. But he went off. 8 for 13. That's above 60%, people. This guy was smoking up against the number one seed in his bracket. did well, and he got the most outstanding player in the West region also. They made sure that they handed him that trophy. Epic work, and you know, I don't even want to say like personal, but like I'm gonna say it personally. Like I'm happy for him to come from the islands to the American game and do all that he can up until this point. I want to see him go as far as possible. It's gonna be an electric matchup. I already like how I started the show off with these two teams going at it. Nova's defense holding Kansas to 59 points, shutting down Perry Ellis. And now you got Buddy Hill going up against the Oregon team, whose offense was electric all season long. They slowed their offense down, and Buddy Hill played that type of basketball that everybody's been waiting to see him play up until this point in the tournament. He's been doing awesome work up until this point. Anything else around this game or on Buddy Hill as well before we get away from it?
Yeah, one quick. There was one possession where Oklahoma was passing the ball around. Buddy Hill never even touched it. I mean, Oklahoma's dangerous. And Oregon was, it's not like Oregon wasn't paying attention to him, because they were. That's how everybody else was going, because they were trying to keep it, but it just didn't work. Buddy Hill still got his.
Yeah, and if you look at, like you were talking about Perry Ellis, Buddy Hill, mm-hmm. as a freshman, from shooting from the field, he was 26%, averaged 7.6 points a game. As a senior, 42%, 26 points a game.
Jesus. That is what you call hard work, man, and especially learning the game, learning how to you know, include yourself in the game wherever sees fit, pulling up for shots wherever he has that room to make this happen. But looking at how this matchup is going to go down, I mean, they say defense wins championships. Can offense prevail in this Oklahoma system going up against Villanova? I think this is going to be one heck of a matchup. I must say.
But you know, somebody that really, I mean, he raised his stock in the draft because he put in the slip to see where he was going to get drafted. They told him second or late second round. And so he came back. Now he could go up to first, second, maybe third round or third pick in the first round. Personally, I hope he doesn't go to Philadelphia or the Lakers.
Will. Let me tell you this. If Philadelphia goes with Perry Ellis in the first pick again, I think Bill Self has something going on with Philadelphia, because they keep picking big men out of the first pick. I just don't understand where else they need to go. I mean, right now they're getting good play out of Ish Smith. I think Ish Smith could, you know, manage the game at the point guard position as of right now. They need a shooter in Philadelphia. They need a guy that can actually put these are the biggest shoes I could give somebody right now. I feel sorry, buddy. Buddy, I'm going to apologize right now. March 27th, 2016. I apologize, buddy. Biggest shoes ever. They need somebody that can come to that team and put the city of Philadelphia on their back. They need somebody that can do it. They got a hope.
Watch Philadelphia go get Ben Simmons. Watch.
Yep, that's exactly who they're going to get. That's exactly who they're going to get.
If they get Ben Simmons, something is wrong with that organization. Something is wrong. I think they need to either go out there and get Pat Crochet something. They need to go do something, because that's not going to get it done. Ben Simmons, Chandler said, is one thing that Ben Simmons don't have that Buddy Hill had. This too. Ben Simmons can't shoot the ball. Ben Simmons can score. He can score the ball.
No,
it's not that.
They say in practice and warm-ups he shoots and drains shots. It's that he doesn't have the confidence to do it in the game.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. I don't care about practice. I don't care. Listen, I'm Allen Iverson right now. I'm a Georgetown fan. Practice. We talking about a game, not practice. Look, he can look good in practice all he wants. When the lights are on, I need you to knock down the shot. The defense don't respect him unless he's driving. When Ben Simmons drives, they try to close the paint up to make him dish, which he's good at, and get other people involved. If he can knock down the shot, that makes him even more scarier. Buddy Hield has that in the bag already. He has that in the
Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is Jeff Green, man. He's Jeff Green all over again. That's who I see when I look at Ben Simmons' game. I see Jeff Green, a whole lot of talent. He's going to be on three or four teams before his career is over. Because everybody going to keep saying, I can bring it out of him. You can't give certain guys an attitude. Certain guys, their personality is just who they are. Ben Simmons is not built to be a killer. He's not built for it. That doesn't mean that he's not a great player. It's just he's not a killer.
He doesn't want to be that big, that go-to guy. Look who recruited him out of high school. Duke, he said no. North Carolina, he said no. Kentucky, Kansas, he said no. He went to LSU. So that just tells you everything right there.
Yeah, with a coach that didn't know how to coach and wouldn't coach him hard.
Right.
He picked a soft landing place. That tells you all you need to know. Because let's be honest, who the hell goes to LSU anymore?
Football players. Let me get it right. Football and baseball players, because they're big in the College World Series situation,
right,
too. LSU players are big in baseball also. But as a football and baseball university, basketball, I really can't think of any big names other than Ben Simmons outside of maybe Mincy. He's in the league. Well, no, they got Mincy in the league right now. He's pretty decent as well. But, yeah, I mean, we could go back to the Shaq, Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf days. I mean, we could go back to the Stanley Robert days. I mean, we could do that. But, you know, I want to be relevant in the 2000 era. Like, I really can't think of two. I can't give you five to six strong names out of that university basketball-wise. Ben Simmons is going to be the biggest thing out of there. And him being a freshman out of the gate says a lot to what Chandler's alluding to. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go into the game as of today, get some perspectives from both of you, in which I feel robbed in saying it like this, how I am going to address it. I'm going to do this just for the people around Sports City and you too, Tommy. I'm going to do this for you, just for you.
Today's
game, it's all ACC, in which two of these teams were Big East teams. I'm going to say that too. I'm going to just get that back into perspective.
They're ACC.
Listen, if they didn't break the Big East up, Notre Dame and Syracuse would be Big East teams. I'm just saying.
This isn't the 90s. Catch up to 2016.
Oh, no, this just happened. Both of those teams just left the Big East. We're not gonna go tit for tat. Notre Dame just left the Big East, and so did Syracuse. This didn't just happen in 1995, 97. No, this happened just recently, a few years ago. Okay. So I want to see how you guys feel about the first matchup, which I think is going to be must-see TV. Get your popcorn ready. Everything is involved in this matchup. Syracuse, the number 10 seed getting this far. I'm surprised Mikey D has not called in and gave me a piece of his mind up against the Virginia Cavaliers, in which – both of these teams, as of now, have been playing strong. I don't even know if strong is the right word for me to say it. Defense, but I'm going to say it like that. Syracuse has been coming up with great stops and surviving as much as possible as a 10 seed to be in the Elite Eight, potentially could get to the Final Four with Jim Boeheim, potentially could be his last season. I don't know. Hopefully Syracuse pushes at him to stick around for what he's been able to get out of this team. And Virginia, they are a number one seed. I stand corrected. The number one seed in their bracket in the Midwest region. Been playing strong ball, winning games, and keeping teams under 55. You know, like they've been doing this. Like this has been the makeup of this Virginia team. You don't know which player to go after, whether it's Brogdon, Gill, players on this team that have been stepping up and playing well for Virginia. I love this matchup right here. I want to see how you guys feel about it. Chandler, I'll start with you first. Syracuse versus Virginia out the gate.
I don't like this game because both of these teams will throw up a clunker at the worst possible moment. Because let's be honest, if their university wasn't named Syracuse, they would not be in the tournament. Monmouth would have got it. So let's start there.
Okay, that's true. That's true.
So, And the thing is, both of these teams are due for a bad game. They're both. I think this might be the ugliest game of the day, to be quite honest with you. Because I think they're both going to throw up a stinker. I'm just going based on the history and based on what they've done this season. At the worst possible times, both of these teams have lost games they weren't supposed to lose. They were big games, and they didn't show up. I honestly think this is going to be the worst game of the day. And looking at it from that context, I think Virginia wins it, but I think afterwards everybody says, "Oh my God, that was a terrible game."
You think it's going to be that bad? Wow. Okay. But they both play defense, so I really can't, you know, take too much away from it because both of them play that defense. And Syracuse's zone extends these teams out, makes them want to shoot questionable jumpers. Even though this is the one thing about Virginia. Virginia's bigs have actually been playing that baseline pretty well, so they've been able to get that guy in the middle of a zone, and Gill's been able to finish at the rim. They've been getting that done consistently almost any time they come down floor. They've been getting that against zones. So this is actually the thing that Syracuse has to worry about is who's on the baseline waiting to receive that entrance pass off of the top of the free throw line, because Virginia does that well. Virginia does that well, so Syracuse needs to be ready for that. And you know, you don't know who you're going to get to be the guy that ends up knocking down a big shot, whether it's Leiden, you know, Coleman coming in off the bench and doing work as well for Syracuse. I give these guys a ton of credit to getting this far. I think they are overachieving. If they knock off Virginia, this will be the shock of the tournament. But I don't hold anything against Jim Boeheim. My whole college basketball career watching them, I know too much about Jim Boeheim and what he can do with a basketball team. Tommy, your thoughts on this matchup, one of the first ACC matchups, if you will, of the Elite Eight, with Virginia, the number one seed, going up against the number 10 Syracuse seed?
I look for Virginia to win this by double figures. I think their defense will shut down Benajay. I mean, in Cooney, I think that defense in Virginia, when they want to, they can lock anybody up. Now, as I say that, I hope and pray to goodness God Syracuse wins this, so they can stick it to the NCAA, because they screwed them at the beginning of the year. I hope Syracuse makes it to the Final Four. But I don't think they do. I think Virginia's defense is just lethal. And I really hope we get to see North Carolina and Virginia in the Final Four matchup. I really do, because that Virginia is lethal.
Now, and here's the interesting thing that Chandler said. If Syracuse didn't have the big name, if they didn't have Jim Boeheim there, you would have had another team in the tournament, i.e. a Monmouth or i.e. St. Mary's, that have played excellent ball. Before the tournament started,
St. Mary's didn't beat nobody all year. Look at their record. Monmouth. But
Tommy,
St. Mary's didn't really beat anybody all year.
Okay. Who's on their schedule? I mean, where are they placed in their conference? I mean, their conference is—they're on the West Coast. They're not going to come to the East and play all of these teams in the East. You know what I mean? Like, they have to play respectfully what they're given. They don't make their schedule. They can pick a few teams that they want to play, but they're not going to pick everybody. Like, they play the team that they're given. What are they supposed to do? This is the same argument that people held toward Boise State when Boise State went on that 5-6 year run where couldn't nobody
you
stop
can
them.
Pick your non conference schedule, Ty. You can pick conference game, but you can go out and play your non conference.
Yeah, and you have to get teams that want to play you though too. Like, some teams could have been turning that down. You don't know what could have been happening right there. They need teams to pick that up. Right, Monmouth did do it. So you're telling me St. Mary didn't deserve to make the tournament?
No, they didn't beat nobody.
I can give you four or five teams right now that St. Mary's played better basketball all year long than right now, including Syracuse. I can put Syracuse in this situation right now. I can give you four or five teams that they played better basketball than right now. You want me to give you 4 or 5?
And you would have put St. Mary's in there, and I guarantee you they would have been. It depends on how the draw went. I guarantee you they've been one of the first teams out of the tournament in the first round.
They play better basketball than Colorado. They play better basketball than Maryland. They play better basketball than Wisconsin.
Maryland would have wiped them off the floor. If Maryland would have showed up, Maryland would have wiped them off the floor.
You hear what you said. If Maryland would have showed up, you wouldn't have worried about St. Mary's not showing up or not. They play better basketball than Cincinnati. That's on one half of the bracket. I'm going to go on the other half of the bracket and give you some more teams over there and see how you feel about it. They play better basketball than Wisconsin. They play better basketball than Pittsburgh. They play better basketball than Butler, Texas Tech, Iowa State. At that, and Iowa State is a good team. And I'm looking at this. Iowa State or St. Mary's, and Iowa State, I would give the leg up, but they play better basketball than them.
And look who all them teams play, Ty. They play competition.
If they're coming out there performing, you can't
go by records. You got to go by who they beat in the top 25, who they beat in the RBI or whatever the hell they go by.
Right. The RPI.
They don't – I'm sorry, St. Mary's didn't beat nobody all year. In that conference they're in, the only other team I can think of as good is Gonzaga. Who else is in that conference? Pacific? I mean,
they can only do so much. Taylor, your thoughts on that? I mean, how do you feel about where he's addressing that St. Mary's didn't play anybody?
Well, one schedule is set a few years in advance. And so a team might be doing well and you schedule them, and by the time you play them, maybe they're in a downswing. Look at Pepperdine. Guys like teams like that were good for a long time, and then they suddenly fell off the face of the earth. San Diego State with old boy they used to coach in Michigan were doing well for a few years. So to have them on a schedule was considered a big deal because they were a nationally ranked team all the time. They were in the top 25. They've fallen off. The players on the team don't control the schedule. Those schedules are set up 2-3 years in advance. And unfortunately, depending on when you catch some teams, and then there's a lot of teams that refuse to play the St. Mary's and the Gonzagas of the world because they know they might catch hell. So they're not going to play them. I can't schedule you if you refuse to play me. You know, I think Syracuse would not have gotten in. St. Mary's would have won a game in the tournament. They might have gone out in the second round. But they would have won a game in this tournament. I mean, Gonzaga had to basically run through their conference to even get in, and we know how good Gonzaga is. They had to beat St. Mary's to get into the tournament. The only reason Gonzaga got in this tournament is because they won their conference. They weren't getting in. And you tell me Gonzaga didn't deserve to be in this tournament. They wouldn't have gotten in. That speaks to the level of play in the West Coast Conference right there. The fact that Gonzaga would not have even been in the tournament had they not won their conference.
And here's the thing in that. Do you know that that's the third game that they played this year, Gonzaga and St. Mary's, right?
Yep.
So it's hard to beat a team three times, right? You know who won the first two games? You know who won the first two games?
Mm-hmm.
St. Mary's beat them.
Yeah,
and Gonzaga's a good team out of the conference, just like he said, and they beat them twice. It's tough to beat them three times. If they had a knockout Gonzaga, I think that would probably been a deciding factor for them to get into the tournament. I don't know. 29-6 compared to some teams that are 19-13, 21-10. Like, are you serious? Are you serious? Like they put together an interesting season, to say the least bit. Of what they've done, especially with them knocking off BYU too. They also beat BYU.
Who knocked Gonzaga out of the tournament? Syracuse. Enough said.
Right. I'm not taking anything away from Gonzaga. I'm not saying Gonzaga's a bad team. Are you saying Gonzaga's a bad team?
A game that came down to the end. And Ty, did I not tell you that Arvidas' son was just a monster? Did I not tell you that kid was a monster?
Yeah, I agree with you.
The
he's tough.
And he's still growing, by the way. And he has his father's footwork. And his father had excellent footwork. That kid has his father. Listen, that kid, Domantas Sabonis, keep your eye on him.
Listen, he's only a sophomore. And that says a lot about what Gonzaga has in the future. If they can get a guard that can knock down shots for Gonzaga, that makes them even more scarier. But St. Mary's was able to beat Sabonis twice. Hey, I don't know. We'll see. Well, we can't see nothing now. I mean, they aren't in their tournament no more, and they ain't in the big dance right now. But like I said, we could go back and forth on where they should have been or who could have been doing what. But for my liking, I think St. Mary's could. And they've always been an interesting team in the dance anyway. Okay, the next matchup for the evening, part two of the ACC matchups, Notre Dame is taking on North Carolina, in which I don't know which way to go with this. Now, North Carolina has been taking care of business up against Notre Dame, but Notre Dame has been playing, you know, end of the game basketball. And when I say end of the game basketball, I mean they've gone through the vigors of the entire game. But when it's like 7 minutes or less, I think Mike Bray gets that possession timeout or TV timeout. He digs into that team, and they play possession basketball, and that's the basketball I was taught. Like, when we get the ball, make sure we score. Make sure when they get the ball and they're shooting, everybody box out. Everybody get to the glass. Everybody rebound. They play together. I'm not even going to lie. Notre Dame has been doing good work up until this point. Doing good work. I can't even say up until this point. Have been doing good work to get them to the Elite Eight. I want to see how you guys feel about this matchup. Does North Carolina continue to keep running the table, or does Notre Dame actually stop this show? And does Mike Bray disregard his calf injury, because their coach is a part of the injury report, people? Mike Bray is injured. Their head coach got injured on the sideline during the game the other day. So I'm saying that funny, but let me knock on wood, because that's not funny to get injured by any means. But, their coach is injured by, you know, stepping on a sticky pad, and he did something to his calf. But I want to see how you guys feel about this matchup, Notre Dame going up against North Carolina. Tommy, I'll come to you first.
Well, they played twice this year. They played once in the regular season, and they played in the ACC tournament. They each won. North Carolina lost at Notre Dame, and then North Carolina won in the ACC tournament. This is very interesting. If they do the same, if Notre Dame can do the same thing they did in the regular season, they can win this. I mean, they got to break the Bryce Johnson. They didn't let North Carolina rebound. That's how North Carolina beats a lot of teams. They get a lot of second chances. If you can keep Hicks and Johnson and them boys off the boards, I mean, you're not going to get every rebound. I know this, but if you can limited their second chances, they can be beat. The point is, this Carolina team is, I really think they want to win this one, because I've got a weird feeling Roy Williams is retiring soon. I mean, I think this him passing out on the sidelines kind of scared him. And I think they know that they want to win another championship for him. I could be wrong. He could be there for another 10 years. Who knows? But I just got a feeling he's retiring very soon.
Okay, Chandler, your thoughts on these two monster coaches going at it, Mike Bray and Roy Williams, who do you favor in the matchup and why?
Well, Tommy brought up a really good point, because North Carolina can't shoot the ball. That's why they hit the glass so hard. The reason they get so many rebounds is their guys miss a lot of shots. I mean a lot of shots. So they'll go through spells, and you've seen this too. They'll go through 3, 4, 5 minutes where they ain't made a shot. But the reason that they're still in the game is because they're rebounding and playing defense. Notre Dame can make shots. So if Notre Dame, like Tommy said, can limit the extra possession, get those 50-50 balls, just you don't even have to out-rebound them. Rebound them even. You'll win the game. Because North Carolina can't shoot. Marcus Paige has had one good game this entire tournament. He's had one good game. He really hasn't shot well this entire season when he's been asked to. Now, some of it was injury, and some of it is the kid, I don't think he can handle the pressure. I'll be honest with you. I don't think he's built for it. I really don't. I don't think this North Carolina team is built for this moment. I think, like Tommy said, they've really been beating teams on athleticism because they're long. Notre Dame can counteract that by making shots. If Notre Dame makes shots, when North Carolina goes into that drought where they're missing everything and think they're just going to out-jump you, they'll lose the game. I think Notre Dame wins this game, and I think it's mainly because I think Marcus Paige disappears again, and I think Notre Dame makes more shots.
Uh-oh, we have an upset on the horizon, really. Is this a nail-biter upset, or is this like a seven-point game? Do you think Notre Dame will win by more than seven?
I think Notre Dame pulls away at the end. In the last 2 minutes, they pull away because North Carolina just starts jacking up shots. I think they get out of their offense in the last 3-4 minutes, and they go down there and just start jacking up shots. And, again, they ain't got no shooters. Name one good shooter on this North Carolina team.
Barry's been hitting shots for him lately. Here and there. I mean, late in the season, Barry's been hitting shots for him.
Okay. Okay. But the guys who are supposed to be hitting shots, they're not good shooters. I mean, Marcus Paige can score, but he ain't a good shooter. So I think Notre Dame pulled him
this year.
Huh?
His shot disappeared this year.
Because of the pressure. I think it's the pressure. Because he was looked at, it was like, Marcus, you got to carry us or we're not going to go anywhere. And I really don't think he's built for it, man. As a matter of fact, he's not a senior, right?
Yeah, he was out most of the year, if you remember.
Yes, he was out most of the year.
And I think that injury has to do with his start. Because he wasn't able to get in there for the practices. He wasn't able to start the first couple games.
Yeah, that's true. But if you're a shooter, you can always shoot. You know what I'm saying? I really, really, really hope that he gets to work on his game because I think that he's not built for what they've asked him to do this season. I think they asked him to carry him, like I said, between the injuries and everything else. I don't think he really was able to do it. Like I said, I think they've gotten by on sheer athleticism and length all year. And we all know at some point you play some team that just positions themselves right for defensive and offensive rebounds. You got to jump over their back. All your big men in foul trouble, now you SOL.
But here's the question that I throw out there. Does Bryce Johnson continue to get these guys out of trouble? Because he's been their workhorse, go-to guy, rebounder. Nobody in the gym could jump with this guy. I think August, the other big man from Notre Dame, I mean, he's a big presence, big body in the paint for Notre Dame. They could try and know each other out, but Bryce Johnson, if North Carolina ends up advancing, I think he gets most outstanding player. Unless Paige can continue to go on with the onslaught that he had in his previous game, where it didn't look like he was going to miss anything, but do they continue to ride Johnson as much as possible?
For me, I think you take a body and you say, your job is to box him out. I don't care where he is. This is your only job. Every big man that comes to place, and this is your one job. You will box him out and make him jump over your back. If you put a body on him and keep him off the glass, I think you totally nullify what North Carolina does.
That's Augustine. Put Augustine on him and tell him this is your job. You don't leave him. You know, wherever he's at on the floor, you put your ass in his thigh, you box his ass down.
That's it. If he's at midcourt, you box him out. I don't care where he is, you put a body on him. And if you do that.
I tell him what I told my boys at coach. I don't give a damn if he goes to the damn bathroom and takes a shit. You put your ass on him and you box him out. You follow him. He goes to the hallway, you box his ass out.
It's easier said than done because this guy knows his way around that goal. That is one thing about Bryce. He's been a double-double monster. If Notre Dame can't deal with him right now, I find it hard for him to win this game. I know that. If they can't deal with him, if they can't keep him off the glass, And as much as and I've been talking junk about him, and he may come up and have a big game right now. And Kennedy Meeks, the other big that they have in the paint, he's scared to score layups, man. Like layups. Like you are 6'10". You're 6'10" at the rim, finish, and he can't. And it's been guys like Jackson or Jonathan have been actually saving him. So I don't know. Maybe he's
going to have
a big game right now. Say that again.
Meeks is too worried about trying to get that and one. Instead of just going up strong, he looks for that foul. And with that, you miss the layup because you expect that foul, and then when you don't get it, you shoot too hard off the glass.
Yep.
Is he related to the Meeks that went to Kentucky?
I don't know. I don't know if that's how the family bloodline goes down. I didn't check that, but the Meeks that went Jody, and I think he's on Philly or the Pistons, if I'm not mistaken. He's a shooter compared to Kennedy being a big guy. Two different players, and you could tell the tenacity that both of these guys play with compared to Jody and Kennedy. He has one more year in college, so hopefully he can come into college and do work next year, because I hope he don't think he's ready for the league right now. I hope he doesn't think he's ready for the league.
I think he declares for the draft.
I think Kennedy Meeks?
Carolina does.
Yes.
Kennedy Meeks is going to – okay. Okay.
No, I'm not saying he should. I'm not saying he should. Listen to what I'm saying. I'm saying based on how he plays, he thinks he's ready to go to the NBA.
That's why I think they want to win this for Roy Williams. Because they're all gone, and I just got a weird feeling. Roy Williams is out soon.
Do you think if they win it, Chandler, that Roy rides off into the sunset?
Yeah, because I think the NCAA posse is coming for them. I think Roy leaves before the posse gets there.
Right.
Yeah. The posse is coming.
He leaves because he could do the same thing Pete Carroll did with USC and all these other coaches do. And then there's nothing you can do to him.
I think he leaves because the posse is coming. They have to. They have to come for him. They went after Boeheim. They went after Calhoun. They're going to have to go after Pitino. They're going to have to because they've already had players that have acknowledged that all of that stuff was going on. They have to go after North Carolina, and Roy Williams is going to get the hell out of Dodge.
Well, they went after – what's the dude? I can't think of his name right now. Dude at SMU.
Larry Brown.
Larry Brown.
They went after him this year. And I'm telling you, that SMU team could have made some noise in this tournament if they were allowed in.
Oh, my God. That SMU team would have made some noise, absolutely.
They were lethal.
Okay. Anything else in front of the tournament before we get away from the tournament? Okay, that helps me. Okay, so – I haven't had anything going on in the kitchen since Thursday after the Crossover Cafe, but there have been topics that have been noted in the sport world that I wanted to bring to the kitchen. So I am going to take the talent to the city of Cleveland.
Oh, good God.
I know. Settle down, people. See, Sports City, I know how to wake them up. I know what I'm doing. The city of Cleveland.
There's a huge baseball topic that you're missing. I'm just going to say that. A huge baseball topic you're missing.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give us a baseball show this week, so I want to save all of that for the baseball show. I do. But I'll let us get there. I'll let us get there also. But, okay. You know what? Since you brought the baseball topic up, we'll go there, Chandler. I'll actually save this for later, but I do want to get to the dog pound. I do want to get there. Chandler, open up the brunch on this MLB topic.
The United States of America lost an icon this past week, and no one's talking about him. Joe Garagiola was born in 1926. He served his country, played Major League Baseball, was one of the best baseball announcers ever. Grew up in the same neighborhood as Yogi Berra, and nobody wants to talk about it. This man did so many things, not just for baseball, but for broadcast journalists. See, all of these, the Michael straight hands who now get to go and do Live with Regis and all of that, and Robert Roberts, who went from ESPN to Good Morning America. Joe Garagiola blazed the trail for these people. He was the first one that was a baseball announcer, and then he hosted the Today Show. This was a man who taught baseball on a baseball telecast. What I know about baseball, what I love about baseball, is because of him. He would tell you things because he played the game and tell you in such a way you could go out and practice it. You could literally go out there on the diamond and practice coming across the bag at second base, turning a double play, and understanding how to use the bag to shield you from the runner so the runner's not going to come in there and break your leg like Rupert Tejada didn't do. Or how if you're going to come across the bag straightway, you drop down side quarter three arm, because what are you going to do? The runner has to get down because now you're throwing the ball at his face. So he has to hit the dirt earlier, which means he now can't take you out on the takeout slide. Little things like that. This man was qualified to talk about Babe Ruth. Why? He was born in 1926. He saw him play.
Mm-hmm.
He played with the giants of this game. Giants of the game. He was qualified in 1970 to tell you about Mel Ott stepping in the bucket. For anybody that knows anything about baseball, if you don't know the term stepping in the bucket, how Mel Ott became a Hall of Famer by stepping in the bucket. That's because the people who are talking baseball now don't know a damn thing about it. This man is why I love baseball. Every Saturday, I would sit there and listen to a game that he did on NBC. And then I would go out there and actually do the things he said. Do the things he said. This man, listen, 1926 he was born. He served his country. Hall of Fame career. Played baseball. Batted better in the only World Series he played in than Ted Williams did in his World Series. Okay? Wrote books. He was the man who started the BAT program, which is a program in Major League Baseball that they use to help indigent former players. He started that program. For the past 20 years, you know what he's done? He's worked to try to get smokeless tobacco out of baseball, to try to save lives. And no one wants to talk about him. No one wants to talk about what this man did, not only for the game of baseball, for his country, for journalism in general. He was a giant of the game, and the fact that no one wants to talk about it pisses me off oh so much. Because when people want to talk about baseball announcers, they talk about Vin Scully. He was better than Vin Scully for me because he played the game, so he could talk technical things. He could tell you little tips and tricks of the trade. But if you like Vin, I'll give you 1A and 1B, whatever order you want to put him in. You know, when Yogi Berra died, we got to give Yogi Berra a medal. Joe Garagiola did the same damn things and more. And more. He received the Buck O'Neill Award. You see, he's in the Baseball Broadcasting Hall of Fame. He's in the National Journalism Hall of Fame. Okay? The man was hosting fireside chats with Gerald Ford, and Gerald Ford was trying to run for president. These were all the areas of this nation that he touched. But all anybody wants to talk about is Johnny Manziel and the Cleveland Browns. And it's a damn shame because that man is somebody that will be sorely missed from this country and what he's done, again, in the fabric of this country, the fabric of the sport of baseball. 1926 he was born. 1926. He saw it all. He saw it all. And no one's talking about it.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts on the topic at hand, the passing of Joe Garagiola. I'm saying it wrong.
Wow. What do I say that Chandler hasn't said? I mean, he knew what he was talking about. Actually, I'll add this. I'd like to have seen him become the commissioner of MLB to see what else he could have done to improve the game. I mean, there have been a lot of stuff that maybe he could have helped better than what it already is. I don't know what else he could have done, but the man knew his stuff. I'll give him that. I mean, Chandler pretty much said everything.
Okay, and I mean, rightfully so. I mean, at least we're hitting here in the kitchen on the situation and looking more in depth into everything that he's done. I mean, he's played against the likes of guys like Ted Williams in the World Series. They're actually talking about the situation that he had at the plate with Jackie Robinson, knowing how instrumental Jackie Robinson was to, you know, ethnicity being involved in the game, these guys having a verbal spat, you know, in a situation where they had to play at the plate. I mean, you know, this is true, genuine stuff that you're getting out of the kitchen, and I must say, for him passing at the age of 90, that this is a lot. He was actually big in the world, even outside of baseball, from what I'm looking at. He was actually involved into, you know, the presidency back in 76 as well. So knowing how he was trying to make things happen for not only just people around the sport game, but also for American, speaks a lot to the amount of, you know, aura this guy brings to the world today. So this is a true diamond that we will be missing, and definitely played on a diamond as well. So let me throw that out there as well. But excellent stuff for Chandler to bring out there about Garagiola. And, I mean, anything else that we need to hit on from him before we get away from him? Because I don't want to leave no stone unturned away from him.
It's just, like I said, it's just sad that he was a genuinely nice man. This was a dude that if you ran into him on the street, he would sit and talk baseball with you as long as you wanted. You would never even know the man played the game of baseball. You would never even know it. And it's just, like I said, for me, the way we whitewash in the history of our sports. And when I say whitewash, I mean we're just erasing the history of a lot of our sports, and this is somebody that we should remember. But, yeah, we can move to the whole Cleveland Browns thing if you want now.
Taylor, do you think he could have made a good commissioner?
I think he would have been the best commissioner ever. Ever.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, because his whole goal was to help baseball players, not just as baseball players, but as people. Like I said, he's the one who started the BAT program, and that is a program that they have to help indigent ex-ball players. He started that program. He was the one who started the program to try to get baseball players off of smokeless tobacco. For the past 20 years, he's been doing that. Now you got these idiot politicians, we're going to ban this, that, and the other. He's been doing that for 20 years with no fanfare.
Right.
No fanfare. He never once said, hey, look at what I'm doing. He just did it.
How do I put this? If he was commissioner, do you think Montreal would still have a team?
Yeah,
you think
they would.
I mean,
they would. Yeah.
I know there's offices are trying to get a team back in Montreal.
I think the team would have stayed in Montreal, and I think the proliferation of steroids wouldn't have happened because he would have nipped it in the bud.
Okay. As I get away from this one, now I'm about to, you know, start to raise the heights in here. It's starting to talk about the situation at Cleveland with RG3, now a Cleveland Brown quarterback. I want to see how you guys feel about this move and also the team that he just left. I mean, I think there's a big storm going on in D.C. with Gruden and the Washington Redskins, because not only did they watch RG3 go to another team, they also watched Alfred Morris go to the Cowboys and get picked up by a team within their division. So this could be like a dual situation here in the kitchen. I want to see how you guys feel about this one. Tommy, I'll start with you first. RG3 in Cleveland in the storm right there where you are in the Metro.
I know one game I'm going to this year is when the Cleveland Browns come to D.C. Yes, I said it. RG3 and the Cleveland Browns will be playing in Washington, well, Landover, Maryland, technically, to
right.
play the Washington Redskins. And I will pray to goodness God my Ravens play that Monday night or have a bye that week, because I can't wait to see, and I hope Griffin is healthy to play that football game, because that will be that could be a fun matchup. I can't wait to see what the fans do to Griffin if they're cheering him, if they boo him, if what they say. I just want to be in the atmosphere. That's all. I don't care who wins. I just want to be there in the atmosphere. Now, for Griffin, I think this is the most horrible move he could possibly make. Really? There's no other team for him to go to. He can't go to the Jets. He can't go to, I don't know. I mean, there's St. Louis needs a quarterback. I'm sorry, because I don't trust Foles. I mean, he went somewhere to even be a backup somewhere. I mean, why? He just pretty much took his career and flushed it right down the toilet, because besides the game in Washington, I could care less about any others except when they play Baltimore. And he's going to have flashbacks when he plays Baltimore of that knee ripping and tearing.
Okay, Chandler, your thoughts on the move with RG3 going to Cleveland?
Well, on many levels, this is the best move he could have made, and it was the only move. You're hearing how Denver, which is looking at Johnny Manziel, claims there were character concerns about Robert Griffin. Robert Griffin ain't beating up his girlfriend. Robert Griffin ain't getting arrested. Robert Griffin ain't going to rehab, but there's character concerns about him. No other team was going to sign him. And I mean no other team, not even as a backup. The Jets brought him in simply because they were trying to bluff Ryan Fitzpatrick. They were never going to sign him. St. Louis was never going to sign him. There's nowhere else for him to go. He's with a coach in Hugh Jackson, who is a really good offensive coach and who wants him there, unlike Washington. Now, I'm going to throw a name out for you. Remember the name Patrick Ramsey?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. Remember the one good season Patrick Ramsey had? Would you like to know who coached him up in that season? It was Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson made Patrick Ramsey look like an NFL quarterback. Okay? And then Hugh Jackson left, and we all realized who Patrick Ramsey was. My point in saying that is Hugh Jackson has a track record of working with guys and maximizing what they do best while also helping them learn the rest of their craft. Robert Griffin didn't play last year, so he essentially finally got that year of healing that he never got in Washington because he kept rushing back and then got criticized for rushing back when any other quarterback that would have rushed back from that would have been called a hero. Robert Griffin was vilified for it. You know, while Jay Cutler is still on the stationary bike, by the way. okay. I think that's the only move he had. And the thing is this, no matter how it works out, listen, there's been 24 other quarterbacks play for Cleveland. They all suck. If Cleveland goes 7-9 next year, or God forbid 8-8, they will build a statue of that young man, because that'd be the best season they've had in ever. They haven't won more than 7 games, I think, in 10 years or something like that. It's some ridiculous number. If he goes 7-9, or if they finish 8-8, tell me that even if they draft this kid from South Dakota State, right? And they decide to make him the quarterback. Tell me there won't be a market for Robert Griffin at that point. This is a win-win for him. He gets to work with a coach who wants him, a coach who's good at coaching up young guys. Listen, Hugh Jackson got Andy Dalton $100 million. Hugh Jackson got Andy Dalton a $100 million contract.
Mm-hmm. Watch Andy Dalton fall off the map this year because Hugh Jackson's not there.
And that's my point exactly. He went to the best guy he could have gone to. Even though, if we look at his contract, this is a one-year deal. We all know this is a one-year deal. Because they're going to draft a quarterback because it's Cleveland, and they got a baseball guy and an accountant running their draft. Okay? So, who knows what the hell they'll do. But if Cleveland is smart, and they trade that pick and they reload the team and start rebuilding the team, I think Robert, working with Hugh Jackson, I think they could go 7-9. 7-9 is not out of the question. Their schedule is probably going to be easier than other teams because they finish lower, so you get an easier schedule. So if things work out for him and they go 7-9, 8-8, he's won. Now he can go to the next team and say, hey, give me that starting quarterback money again. Then he can go to a Jets because at that point they'll be tied around his pack and throwing interceptions. Or he can go to a St. Louis because they'll need an attraction for the new stadium. He has to build equity right now and prove he can stay healthy. I honestly believe, now when I first heard it, I was like, oh, my God, why? This is Cleveland. But the more I heard and researched it, man, and the fact that nobody else was offering him a job, let's be honest. No other team wanted him, man. No other team wanted him.
Okay, well, how about the other piece of that backfield, too, in Washington? Alfred Morris going to Dallas. Nobody's talking about that. Like, isn't that – do you guys feel that's a big piece, a part of their offense that's going to be missed, or do you think that Cousins could actually get these guys around 9-7 again without Alfred Morris behind them?
No. Listen, Alfred Morris – you know what? Here's how stupid teams are, and I don't understand this. The Jets got Chris Ivory, and every quarterback they're putting in looked better when Chris Ivory was running. Is Chris Ivory a guy – that's going to run away from anybody for like a 60-yard touchdown? No. He's going to get you 10, 7, 18, 23, 5, 7, 18, 23, and you move down the field. What does Alfred Morris do? Does the exact same thing. What does he allow you to do? He allows you to not have your quarterback throw 30 times a game. When was Tony Romo good? When he had DeMarco Murray, right? You give him Alfred Morris, who can move the ball down the field. Tony Romo's not throwing 30 times a game anymore. Guess what the Cowboys are? They're back in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Guess what Washington is? Out of the playoffs. Why? Because they think Jay Gruden, again, wants to prove he's the smartest guy in the room. I'm going to let Jay Cousins air it out. Jay Cousins is going to throw Jay Cousins. Yeah, I may as well call him Jay Cousins. That's like his damn son. But Kirk Cousins will be throwing 30-plus times a game, and I don't think the Redskins win more than 6 games this coming season.
Tommy, your thoughts on Alfred Morris moving to the Cowboys? Do you think that's a big deal for the Redskins or a bigger pickup for the Cowboys?
I love it for Dallas, just like Chandler said. They got that running back now that can sit down and pound it and pound it and pound it. And then once you think their linebackers and their safeties are going to creep up, you run that play action and you can get Dez up over the middle deep. It's going to be there. Watch.
It's scary. I must say that they're helping a team in their damn division. Like I don't get that. I don't get that by any means. And I mean, it's the Redskins. Like, whether they go through general management or talk to Gruden or what, there's a lot of questions there by the moves that these guys have made for them to try and get better. They actually look like 9-7 was the end all. It looks like we're going to turn back around and see if we can stay around 500. I don't think they tried to improve to be better than 9-7. When I think that's the ultimate goal, to get to the playoffs and do better than what you once did. Especially with guys like DeSean Jackson that continue to get hurt. I mean, you got to think about that. If you got Kirk Cousins throwing the ball like crazy, DeSean Jackson could potentially be in a situation where he could get hurt again. When's the last time DeSean's given you 16 games? Pierre Garçon, how much are you going to work him like he's a running back? Pierre Garçon is a running back on the outside, like, to be honest. So, I don't know. This is something that actually had me up in arms about this situation, especially around this Redskins team at this point in time, where they could have hung on to a running back like this. Because right now, they have running backs that, I don't know, can carry the load for the full 16-game season. I really don't.
Watch them when Dallas goes to Maryland to play Washington. Why is Jerry Jones doing all the prep? He's like, this is what I want. I want you to run that man to death. Show them and thank them. Show them what they could have got. He is going to rub it in their face. Alpha Morris is going to run as hard as he's ever ran since his rookie year. He will try to get that 200 yards that game.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, Alfred Morris going for 200 against the Redskins. That's exactly what I was thinking. He might run for 250.
He is going to run hard.
Okay. I had a couple more topics that I wanted to get to. I think I'm only going to be able to get to one or two of them, in which I got an NBA topic. And I also had another NFL topic, but I don't think it's strongly relevant, the NFL situation. But the NBA topic that I wanted to get to is Blake Griffin has actually been cleared to practice and he'll be back for the Los Angeles Clippers. Now, the Clippers have actually been surviving the storm as much as they possibly can, in which a lot of people have been throwing Chris Paul's name into the, you know, the 2A or 2B for MVP talk for being able to hold this team together while Blake has been out. Do you think Blake will be rusty, or do you think Blake could come back and have an instant impact to make the Clippers as potent as possible approaching the month of April and the playoffs, which are upcoming? Tom, I'll come to you first.
I don't think he will. Unless he, I mean, see him in basketball shape. I mean, he's just sitting around. I mean, if he's in basketball shape, he might be an extra body for him to help. But I don't see them him making a big difference in if they play OKC, San Antonio, or Golden State. I mean, one of those three teams you can click into, well, two of the three you can click into being in the Western Conference Finals. I just think it comes down to one of them three. Now, he may help push it to a game five or game six or possibly a game seven, but I don't – with him just sitting around and not really doing a whole lot, you gotta get him in basketball shape.
Chandler, your thoughts on Blake Griffin? His rust, will it be a factor? Could he be an instant impact to help this team be potent while they approach the month of April and the last stretch for playoff positioning?
If he were coming back to, say, the last 20 games, I'd say yes. He's coming back for less than maybe 10, I believe, right?
Right.
Then no, because he's still going to be working his way back into shape. And also, listen, they developed a system and a chemistry with him gone. This disrupts that. And you can say what you want about you adding a great player is always good, which is true, but it is still a disruption to what you've been doing. You got into a routine. They've been in a routine for 2 months now. They're used to playing a certain way. They have to change that with him on the floor. You know, and is he willing to buy into the new system, to the way they're playing now, or do you totally adjust everything, which throws everybody off, to go back to what you were doing because we're not used to doing that no more? Tommy knows this as a coach. If you're playing the same eight guys all the time and you add a ninth guy, which totally changes the way you run in your offense and your defensive rotations, your team don't look, the first few games, you're like, what the hell is going on out here? Don't y'all know what to do? No, because we're not used to playing with him. Even though we played with him before, we ain't used to playing with him no more. He got to get used to us. Or does everybody have to adjust to him? This, I think, is the biggest thing that will impact whether Doc Rivers is just a coach next year or maybe gone altogether. I really do. Because I see Blake coming back and disrupting what they're doing, man. And then people are going to start looking at Doc Rivers, finally, Teflon Doc. And I think it ends badly for the Clippers. I think they go out in the first round. I think it ends badly.
Because I could be wrong. Doesn't he still have that four or whatever suspension from that fighting with his trainer?
And he also faces the four-game suspension as well. So that as soon as
No, here's what they said. He doesn't have to be on the active roster to serve the four-game suspension. So he's gonna serve the four games before they put him back on the active roster.
Wow. Right, exactly. Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So he practices. Once he gets cleared, he's on the roster, then he serves the four-game suspension. That's what I'm saying.
No. I'm saying they're not even doing that. They're saying basically that they can just pick four games while he's still practicing and not even clear. Like, clear to practice isn't back on the active roster. You can practice, not be on the roster. So the 4 games is going to be these last 4 games just before they clear him to play.
Oh, so they're doing the Clippers a favor. Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Nowhere near fair. And the one thing that I am worried about or concerned about for Blake is how his shot is going to be. You know, like, because a lot of people are going to make sure that they wall him off of getting to the lane because, of course, that's the easiest thing for him to do is jump and dunk. You know, like, I want to see if he can hit that shot, if he's going to knock down that bank shot because he just broke his hand. He just broke his hand. So I want to see if that's consistent for him, because that was the one thing a lot of people had to knock against him, if he could knock down the shot consistently. So not only will the rust be there, we want to see if that hand is still efficient enough for him to knock down shots and we keep him out of the lane. That was the one thing that I want to throw out there. That is what I want to see.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting.
Right. And the NBA, you guys are slick. You guys are, you pick your poison, because Blake is, quote-unquote, the goody two-shoes guy, quote-unquote. But if it was somebody else, you would have held their feet to the fire. I'm just saying. Don't let it have been a Russell Westbrook, a Carmelo Anthony, you know names that are big, but they look at as the bad guy. I'm just saying.
And by the way, Ty, my MVP ballot is Russell Westbrook, John Wall, and Kyle Lowry. That's my MVP ballot. I'm sorry, because if you look at what these young men have done with their game, John Wall is quietly having one of the best seasons of his career, and he's playing for a terrible coach, so nobody knows it. Okay? He is a complete point guard. Russell Westbrook, how many triple-doubles does he have? Like 50? Like 50?
Yeah, 15 on the season. Six in the month of March. If he gets one more this month, he ties the high for triple-doubles in a month held by Larry Bird. If he gets two, he breaks it. So I can only stress so much about Russell. A lot of people get mad at me when I talk about Russ, but I mean, this is what I see on a night-by-night basis, what this guy is bringing to the team. And they put all their eggs in one basket. They got rid of a lot of their pieces for Russ, and he's doing what he can while they're together. So, you know, obviously the pick that everybody's going with is Steph Curry, and I think that's more or less the most valuable team. I don't think that makes him the most valuable player. He can shoot the lights off of Jupiter, but, I mean, what else is he bringing to the game other than scoring? I mean, this guy is a fucking triple-double, and you're telling me that a full team is giving Curry the most valuable player award. I don't know. That's a whole other argument discussion in itself. And I know we could definitely save it for either the wrap-up or the cookout. That's for sure. That is for sure.
Thank you, Chandler, for not having me be the only one to see what John Wall's doing. Because he's up there, too, in them triple-doubles. He's pretty much carrying this Wizards team by himself. And what I'm scared of is him leaving. And then this team's going to fall apart.
You know what? The thing about him, he's a loyal guy, and I think he likes being in that area, and he wants to succeed with that team, and he's grown there, and you know, he's got some connection there. Remember the young girl that he had befriended who wound up passing away and all of that. So I don't think he leaves unless they make him leave, but they got to do better by that young man. I'm sorry. They got to do better.
He's pissed off. He's very pissed off. I mean, he went off in the locker room. I think it was the last game they lost because they're not in the playoffs and they should already be in a playoff situation.
Well, I said when they traded for that Morris kid and they gave up that pick, I'm like, how are you giving up that high a pick for that Morris? I'm sorry. I still have a problem with that trade. And I said at the time it wouldn't do a damn bit of good, and it hasn't. It was a dumb trade. Now, if you could have got Morris for nothing, basically a bag of balls, which they were willing to give him away, yeah. But they gave up a first-round pick. I'm sorry. I'm not hearing it.
Okay. Well, we got more to talk about now. Now that I got dishes, we got recipes for other shows now coming up soon. I need plugs and close out to each of you. Tommy, I'll go to you first. Excellent stuff. Give me a plug, close out, anything that you like to shout out as we shut it down on Easter Sunday.
Hope you all have a nice Easter. Chandler, Ty, everybody at Sports City, be safe. I want to thank the four seniors for what they've done for the University of Miami. Shelly McClellan, Angel Ortiz, Ja'Kari. The other guy, I can't really think of your name right now. Sorry. We'll be back next year. The Kings team will be back next year. We'll be good. Ty, when are we going to do a baseball show? I mean, the season's, what, a week away?
I was thinking either Wednesday or Saturday, but I need to talk to the two of you to see if you guys want to do it either Wednesday or Saturday to plug those empty holes. So we will talk outside of the kitchen, but that's what I was trying to introduce. The baseball buffet will be back.
Right.
Okay, Chandler, plug, close out, shout out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut it down here in the kitchen.
Well, I'm going on 72 hours pain-free for the first time in over 10 years. The fact that I had to threaten violence at the VA hospital to get the correct meds bothers me, but still, I'm going on 3 days with no pain for the first time in almost 10 years. I don't know what to do with myself. Although now that I take the meds, I can't sleep, so I'm up all night, but, you know, it's a trade-off. I either sleep and have pain or don't sleep and have no pain. Other than that, man, my nephew doing his thing, shitblademusic.com. He's doing his website with clothing and music and everything. But other than that, it was a lot of fun today, fellas.
SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog, the chef. We'll be back tomorrow with the wrap-up. You already know how stuff goes around in this kitchen. We got four more days, Sports City, of the month of March. And I'm going to tell you, madness ain't even the right word to use for this month. This month has been complete pandemonium. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. Happy Easter, y'all. And if y'all don't know, now you know.
Ow. Welcome to Sports City. TP Thomas is at the helm.
Feeling kind of Sunday.
Moses taking care of the Midwest. I'm TP Thomas holding down the East Coast.
TP, I am ready to back rock.
And the only thing, I got one thing to wish you people.
Good morning.
It's a Sports City Chef with Sunday the Brunch with Mark and TP.
Good morning.
So kick back, relax, enjoy this, everybody. Don't turn on the TV.
Good morning.
It's a Sunday morning brunch with Mark, the Moses, and TP Thomas.
Good morning.
So sit back, relax, in 2 hours with facts. That's a fact, yeah.